Welcome back, everybody, to the Research VR podcast. Today is another episode with Diedrich from Hello VR, and they're building some pretty fantastic social VR experiences. And Diedrich and I were just kind of chatting about like really interesting social or the factors of essentially immersion and the believability of a space. And we weren't disagreeing, but we're trying to clarify on like why we thought certain things. So you started off with what was the environment? You have to believe that.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, yeah, so we were talking about essentially levels of presence, right? So, not so much as, what is required to generate presence in VR, but more so the sort of layers of presence that a user can experience in VR. And for us, we're a social VR company, and our focus is solely on maximizing social presence in virtual reality. So that feeling that you're actually sharing space with another human being. But we're finding that layering levels of presence is sort of creating a sensation that sort of locks you into the experience longer periods, right? So you've been in VR experiences where you sort of daydream, right? You kind of you have that sense of being in the world, but you're still sort of like in touch. You sort of like one foot in mm-hmm. in the natural world, mm-hmm. right? So like we're finding that like when you sort of layer presence, starting with the environment presence, right? That sense that I'm in an environment, mm-hmm. a believable environment. And then, of course, I mentioned social presence, that feeling that you're sharing space with a person. Mm-hmm. And I think the key there is experience with a person and not sort of an avatar, right? It's that, that believable, that the head is tracked properly, the hands are tracked properly, the brain does interpolation to kind of, fill in the gaps, and you believe that it's the person. The body language comes through. I know it's you because I've subconsciously studied your body language kind of thing. True social presence. And we've also been experimenting with what we're calling cognitive presence. So that's the feeling.
What does that mean, dude? What is this buzzword you're throwing out there? Cognitive this, cognitive that. That's a very true and dear word to me. So, what does that mean?
Sure. So, I'll give you an example. So, you are a conscious being, right?
Mm-hmm. Hope so.
You are. Hope so, right?
So you can't prove that, Yeah. But yes.
So, if you were to not speak, to not give me any sort of social cues and not communicate, mm-hmm. I'd have a sense of presence with you, right? I'd have a sense of, shared moment with a conscious being, a conscious entity, right? There's a window and there are birds flying about, right? Mm-hmm. So I have this sense that there is life in the world. And I know that when the bird flies, I know that it isn't a scripted sprite flying in a fake window.
Because you guys,
I know that it's
that.
Thinking. It's a thinking creature, mm-hmm. right? From the brain driving the nervous system and the muscles. It has a mission, right? It has the sense that it's attempting to accomplish something. Right. And my brain makes these calculations on the fly, and I accept it as real. I accept it as a part of the experience I'm having, mm-hmm. And that creates for me a deeper sense of presence.
So I'm going to push back a little bit here. So what's the difference between the cognitive end of things to, the cognitive presence to the environmental presence? Because it sounds like everything that's not you and your partner that's in the game is environment. So why is that a third layer? Is that just a more complicated version of the first layer?
Well, the environment can also induce cognitive presence, right? So we simulate trees. And wind, mm-hmm. And we deliver kind of this sense of the environment being alive, the environment being intelligent. Mm-hmm. So that is, in fact, cognitive presence. We also generate more static environments and objects within those environments. So, rocks, for example, right? You can sort of deliver a sense of presence of the environment within the environment simply by not distracting kind of the flow of things, mm-hmm. right? So I'm in an environment, there's nothing to distract me, to make me sort of detract me from the experience of the environment, right? So like there are no flaws, right? So you know, you're constantly scanning environments for flaws. Like, oh, that looks like a video game. Yeah. That looks like, wait a minute, that's off. Mm-hmm. So you can actually eliminate that. You can reduce the cognitive load in that sense and like deliver a true sense of environment presence. The way we've been experimenting with it.
Wow, how are you accounting for the shifts or the glitches in that matrix where you're being thrown off?
Yeah. So what?
Reducing polygons or reducing the amount of interactions?
Well, what we've done is we're seeing some success with, a little bit of success with, is we've been mixing textures, mixing sort of fidelity a little bit, right? So like objects that you interact with, we place an emphasis on detail. And we completely simulate lighting. We're using PBR lighting system, so it's like real time lighting, right? But also let's consider that in the environments we're creating, there's a single persistent sun, right? So that also kind of locks you in, right? Because you get a sense, and your brain's really clever. You know that the shadows are, you know, you get it. You've seen the way shadows bounce off of rocks. You get it. So when that is successful, when it actually when it's a successful simulation of light and shadow, and the textures are right, you have a sense of presence with that object. Right. When you pick up rocks, you kind of feel like you feel a sense of presence just with the rock. So you will accept. Wow. You will then accept the cartoony floor or the you know the simple shading that's happening on the ground beneath you, because there's that sort of balance. And what ends up happening is you sort of find this middle ground where you just simply accept the world. As something right. new, as something transcendent.
I just realized actually that I didn't give the full introduction of Hello VR, where it's actually, so think about it this way. Think of AltSpace. Actually, funny enough, Diedrich was the first designer at AltSpace.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And Hello VR is essentially a meta world, a social environment that is always persistent. So it doesn't matter if there's a one person there or 100 people or even no people in there. It's going to be a living space where you, when you go back, you see the consequences of your actions from the time before. So, I mean, that's a really compelling argument, I think. And your effect on environment is kind of what has like sold me back in the day with like Battlefield, where like, oh, crap, well, I can build, you know, destroy this wall. And then throughout the rest of the match, that building is destroyed.
Yep.
Really cool. I'm like, I want that. And I've seen so little of like, other than simple picking up objects and interactability. But like, you know, there isn't much in VR yet. And I can imagine, you know, the processing, and they're trying to do it as cross-platform as possible, which is why I think AltSpace looks so, you know, bland in a sense, because they are accounting for Gear VRs and whatnot. So
we're working on a very different product. We're solving a completely separate set of problems, really. So when we show up in Steam, we're going to categorize MetaWorld as a simulation.
Interesting.
It's a true simulation. So we're more concerned or more sort of involved with creating massive scale simulations. And so, and the social element is, you know, it's when we've done our jobs, we created a place.
Right.
Like, you know, and then virtual reality, fortunately enough, allows us to bring actual people into the place, and hence the social piece. Persistence is just, you know, in my years of playing video games, and having computational experiences, it's why I fell in love with computers.
Yeah.
It's like, it, for me, it's the holy grail. It's this, you know, I've played, you know, we've played countless games and have had countless experiences where we've interacted with objects and, you know, you kill a bad guy and you know, you come back and he's gone, right? And, you know, immersion's broken or the story's broken, right? And so we've become accustomed to it. But so finally having the ability to generate worlds that are absolutely persistent. And I mean, like, I mean, you think about it, like, if, you know, if every single user let's take Second Life, for example.
Okay.
If everybody logs off of Second Life, what happens to Second Life? Computationally, what happens?
The server, I actually have no idea.
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
It dies. Nothing happens. There's no computation. It's dead. It's a dead world.
Got it.
So with Spatial OS, what we've done is we've introduced a,
a simulated environment that lives on when no one is around, right? The entities in the world persist. They're doing things. They're thinking. They're making decisions. You come back into the world, and it's not the way it was when you left it. And so it's almost like there's this sort of chicken egg problem in social VR, right? Like there are like 8 people on AllSpace right now. There are probably like 20 people in Rec Room right now, right? Yeah, right. So
is it big of a difference now with
I think so. But check this out.
But check this out.
When we launch Meta World, we're not going to care how many people are there. We're launching a persistent world. If people show up, great. But the world doesn't need anybody.
Right.
It lives whether people are there or not.
Well, I mean, you run into the philosophical argument.
To be the only individual in this world. Think about it. If we are doing our jobs, like we could. I mean, if we're not doing our jobs, none of this works. None of this makes sense. It's bullshit. But if we do our jobs and we create a place, right, a real place that is believable when you get there. How awesome would it be to be the only person around?
It'd be interesting. I mean, even coming back after like a war scene and like just being the only person there, like think about that environment and you're like, wow, there's a lot of wreckage. You can tell where people have stepped.
Yep. It's their soul, dude. And I think there's kind of the, what I think is interesting is kind of what we can learn from it, right?
What can we learn?
You know, what we can sort of learn, by having these sort of experiences. I mean, the first time we prototyped a basketball experience. In fact, it's probably on YouTube someplace. And the community is just sort of like, yeah, whatever. Like, we've seen basketball in virtual reality. What's significant about this damn basketball game you guys are playing? Well, a few things. The sun was sort of, the persistent sun kind of, slowly moved across the sky as we played basketball, right? So, like, midway through the game, we kind of paused. My partner, Carlton, and I, we sort of pause and look over and we start watching the sunset. And it was in that moment that I realized, like, wow, like, you know what? This is beautiful. I'm going to come back at this time to see this again.
And is it a 24-hour persistent sun that you had
right.
in there? Okay.
That's right. So I had this sense like, dude, I want to see this again. It was just sort of magical and accidental, right, that this happened. So more happened, actually. So we leave the experience, right? And I come back. I'm in my living room, and you get that sort of like, weird feeling when you've been in VR for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Except that now I could still feel the sun beaming on my head. I had this warm feeling from the sun.
Right.
It was as if I came indoors, from playing basketball. And I had this vivid memory of playing basketball with Carlton.
Yeah.
And I had to wrestle with like, okay, dude, did that really happen? Did it happen? Yeah. Did it not happen? It's just now. So now today I have this memory of playing hoops with my buddy in the sun. And, I think it was in that moment that I realized like, okay, wow, like, there's so much sort of untapped to these, fast scale, persistent virtual reality experiences and so much to learn.
And I think VR is just so pivotal in terms of memory creation and the difference of the memory that you create when you're in VR than not. And it's because it's this multimodal experience. You have almost every sense incorporated into your brain, as soon as you're believing it, and even if you're not believing it, honestly, even if you're not, let's say, immersed, quote unquote, you still just like develop such a fond memory of that or vivid memory of that. There's a good amount of research actually in that end I've seen some with kids, essentially like swimming underwater with whales. And this was in a VR, kind of a research grade VR headset.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2 weeks afterward, they were asked again, like, was this real or not? I mean, it was a better questionnaire than that, but like, they very much believed that it was real.
Yep.
And I think this is the type of stories we'll be telling in about 10 to 15 years are going to be very different. Because even if you tell the story now of you playing, Halo with your friend, you still did that thing with your friend, even though it's a virtual, right? Like,
yep.
So I like the approach that you guys are taking with this very fundamental experienced veteran in social design, the social VR design, which is already a very small subset of VR designers. And what are the essentially the lessons learned that you're bringing from AltSpace with you and from other experiences that you've seen? And how are you making Hello VR like the best social VR experience that you can create? Apart from the persistence, because I think we've covered that one.
Did we cover persistence?
I don't know. If I throw a rock over there, okay. Yeah.
Is it going to persist?
if a tree falls.
That's what I mean. That's a philosophical question you're trying to solve right here in a virtual way.
Oh, man.
You're mentioning hands and like dangling hands.
I decided, it's kind of interesting is like, prior to joining AltSpace, I was executive creative director at Comcast. I was working on entertainment operating systems, mm-hmm. and I brought VR. I had a lab down in New York. You know, we were doing like Internet of Things. You know, mm-hmm. toying around with bringing robots to into living rooms, and tried VR DK1. In fact, a woman at a makers fair asked me if I wanted to try DK1 and if I let her try my Google Glass.
Okay.
And so we swapped and I don't think if I had that experience I would be talking to you guys.
Wow.
At this point I put on the DK1 and I had the experience of presence and that was it for me. So I took the DK1 back to Comcast and was like, look, we've got to figure out a way to connect this to set-top boxes. This is the future. And
cable TV just patented or just was granted a patent actually for streaming or watching cable TV or DirecTV in VR.
Oh,
just a side note. Yeah.
Interesting. Uh-oh. That's going to be Yeah, man. Yeah. So I came into VR as a as a designer primarily focusing on design and experience around the home. And so I saw the potential there, and like the first, if you think about it, like look back, like the first like tangible interface in virtual reality was AltSpace. There was no Gear VR. There was there were social VR apps like VR Chat and a couple others, but the first like totally like cohesive, user friendly interface. I mean, it's the same interface. It's still there, right?
Right.
And it stemmed from my experience creating 10-foot experiences, right? 10-foot experience being one that, a computational experience with a television. You're 10 feet away from it.
Right? Okay, I'm like, what does 10-foot mean? Okay, yeah.
Right?
Is that a term in the industry then?
Yeah, it's a UX term, a design term, 10-foot experience. Got 2-foot is mobile. It's 2 feet away from a mobile device.
I've heard of these terms. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Long story short, I completely fell in love with this idea of bringing the 10-foot experience to virtual reality. I just thought, I knew it would work. But there was sort of more to it, right? It was beyond sort of bringing the flat two-dimensional experience to virtual reality, bringing a fully, fully immersive UI to virtual reality was what I was after. And it hadn't quite nailed. Right? We did a lot of voice stuff at Comcast. Part of my job there was introducing voice to the remote control system, for example.
Yes, that was you. Oh, dude, I have to say, the new Comcast Xfinity remote, I love that thing. And I was sitting there just looking at it. Also, a couple of interesting things I've noticed about it. The it has backlighting, but it's not always on. When you pick it up, it turns on the backlighting itself. It's freaking genius.
Yeah, I gotta give a shout out to Tom Loretan because. That's right out of Tom's playbook. Tom's awesome.
Leaving
Comcast and then joining AltSpace
mm-hmm.
as a designer meant like completely setting the bar by way of paradigms for in design and. So I think the question was sort of like, what did you learn? What were some of the learning experiences? For me, it was really just sort of like discovering that I really, really cared about bringing humanity together through technology. That it was I discovered that it was in fact a calling. In fact, that it was something that I cared about and hadn't. had the opportunity to really, be a part of in a very sort of personal way, really. I'm from the Bay Area. I'm from Menlo Park. Mm-hmm. And, but I've been around, man. From the early web days to worked on some of the first commercial websites ever. I'd always had this sort of feeling that there was sort of this like invisible, kind of this wall between people, when it came to computational experiences. And it still exists. Like that website, there are thousands of people on it right now, right? But you can't see or interact with them. And I always found that like really strange that we have these like walled experiences, these two-dimensional experiences with millions of people on the other side that we don't ever see or interact with. And I always had this like, I had this like idea, this like dream really to just expose that.
I don't know how true that is. I mean, especially because we're looking at Facebook.
Google. There's a Google search bar.
Okay. So I thought we were talking about Facebook.
Facebook, Google, whatever. I mean, like, you know, just web experiences in general. There are people, when you're using a web experience, there are people on the page with you, right? And you don't have that exposure to people on the page. So what we're really sort of advocating for at Hello VR, particularly with MetaWorld, is, we're not going to do a whole lot of talking on forums. Probably not going to. This is probably my one and only podcast. Next conversation, it's got to be in VR.
Exclusive. Right? Yeah. You know what? I'd love to do this in VR.
It's got
to
be in VR. Yeah. We got to gear it up and do it in VR. There's just this sort of exposure around actually being present with individuals through technology. And I couldn't imagine creating an experience that did not have that. I'm very much like kind of social first as a designer now, which is kind of funny because before I took the job at Allspace, I interviewed at Facebook, it kind of went south because of this concern that I wasn't into social.
Interesting. As in social media, social, like of posting of yourself?
It was sort of at a time, I think, when Facebook had just bought Oculus.
Right.
So my idea of social and sort of the VR idea of social hadn't quite caught on, I think, throughout the organization. Mm-hmm. So I was effectively, it was kind of a bad, like, it was kind of a, like ship sailing in the night. Because then I go off and create Allspace, and we actually beat Facebook to market with a social VR app.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
And now they have a whole team dedicated on producing social VR applications, not just one, but
totally
an array of them. So
yeah, which is exciting. I mean, we use some of their stuff too. We're using LipSync from Facebook. Are from Oculus.
From Oculus, yeah, that was in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
And of course, the Oculus SDK, and totally pumped on the next Kinect too. Like, I think some really, really awesome social tools will come out of that.
A quick thing, kind of, I think why Rec Room suddenly became a huge hit is because it's funny, actually, if you listen to Google I/O, they had some Manuel Clement. Shout out to Manuel. He came on the stage and he's a prototyper at the Google Daydream Interaction Labs, or just Daydream Labs. And they essentially had like 40 weeks where they just had a project a week, and they just played with VR and just built awesome things. And the talk was essentially a good way for them to just download all the information onto developers everywhere. And what Rec Room did is literally just like sat there, took notes, and took those things. So some of the things that they took there was, starting with, if you have a social experience in VR, don't just put two people in a room together, but actually give them something to do, to grab with their hands, and actually like a small little, not a full-on game to play, but like a little goal. Second is like if they touch hands, like if they do a high five, actually do a visual and an auditory confirmation of that happening. So sparks fly whenever you have a high five, which looks awesome. So you just do fist bumps all around. Third is like they were kind of looking, actually it was in regards to trolling and like putting hats on other people, which actually they didn't like
disallow. They actually allowed for that to happen. So it was literally like they took the Google Daydream notebook and just like applied it. And they, and this is just comes from prototyping these things and building on top of them. So knowing that now, I mean, where what are some of the interesting things that you've seen that you're building on top of now, and that other developers can kind of, you know, if they want to get into social VR, what can you, what would you recommend? What are the interesting things you've noticed?
We've noticed that, like, you know, trolling is obviously a huge issue in VR, right?
Yeah.
And the way we sort of see it is, it's almost like a, in a way, it's a failure on the part of the developer to create a genuine sense of social presence. Like, if I gave you an axe and you actually believe that it were an axe, and you actually believe that I were a person, chances are you're not going to lunge at me and chop me. But if you thought I were a cartoon character or the axe was fake, then you have no problem with like swinging the axe, right? So when social VR is at its best, it's believable. Mm. So what we aim for are truly believable experiences that when they work, they often curtail some of the riffraff we come across in social VR. For example, for us, context is everything. If you place, the first thing you mentioned was if you place a person in a room. Well, if you place two people in a room, chances are they're either gonna fight or they're gonna or they're gonna fight.
Right.
So like, immediately I'm in this room, it's tense, there are five other people in there, I'm gonna get rowdy. We tend to focus on kind of environment as a context. So like out there actually has an out there. Rooms are not rooms. Rooms are to scale spaces, four walls, and beyond the four walls is place and space. And developers, designers getting into social VR. I think considering context is truly truly important. Rec room is a perfect example of context.
Yeah.
Immediately, it's a rec room. It's a dorm room. Right. I'm gonna go in. I'm gonna rip shit. I'm gonna wild out. Right. It's perfect setup. it's a beautiful story. Fun as hell. And so for a rec room, it's sort of figuring out ways to kind of break that context or to evolve the context is going to be an interesting problem for them, or interesting discovery for them. Introducing the dorms was sort of a clever way of evolving context a bit, right? Suddenly, dorm room sort of equates it, completely fit,
right?
Fit sort of the rec room theme. And we did we've taken a similar approach with Meta World Pioneer Edition, right? Like suddenly, coining the edition Pioneer is sort of gives it a good deal of context, gives you something to sort of wrap your head around.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Diedrich. I think this has been a really interesting and an impromptu little conversation that we were having, and I was like, I need to pull out the microphone and like get this on tape because this guy knows what he's talking about. And I think all our viewers and listen, well, no viewers yet, but I think I want to take this into a social VR experience. I think it would be really cool if actually audience members are there to actually see it. Kind of like the Foo show with what they've done, but I think there's a lot of production that goes into what Foo's done. Thank you again, DJ.
No doubt. Cheers, man.
Cheers. And thank you again for listening, and join us for our next episode.